learn in one of the richest countries in the world, and it totally blows my mind that this goes on and on year after year, and they don't seem to have any resources or manner in which to change what is happening to them. And I just find that our politicians, well, they're already in the news, but our local politicians are letting us down more so than anyone else in dealing with this constant problem that is right in their face.
It does seem pretty unbelievable that in a country that supposedly is affluent as our own, we would be doing so badly in terms of, human rights abuses of people who are without homes, and a failure of government to do anything about the problem. Have you ever been homeless?
Well, I could very well be homeless, but because I've been through some difficult times in my life where I had very little resources, and fortunately I had some resources, or I had the predisposition to look for somewhere to go, and was fortunate enough to find people who were good enough to put me up until I got over the hard times. But obviously a lot of people are not in that situation. And when I sit back and I look at it, the way things are just going in this country, I just don't know what some of those people are going to do. I know that you just had some fellow on who ended up robbing a bank, and a police officer was injured in the course of that, and he ended up in prison. And he started off, I believe, as a homeless person. And when I look around me, especially in the provincial prisons, there's a lot of people who go there for homelessness or for tickets more than anything else. They can't afford to pay tickets, obviously, because they're very poor. And then they go from there eventually, because they come in so often, end up in the federal system. And then they leave here as drug addicts and junkies, and then they're right on the revolving door to becoming a career prisoner, not a career criminal, because they're not really criminals. They're just destitute people who just can't seem to get a break, and the government just don't seem to care about that marginal group within society that is so prevalent.
Yeah, it does seem pretty difficult for people who are already, the most vulnerable in society and have the fewest resources. It does seem like it must be very difficult for them to break that cycle, given that they are also being harassed and targeted by police. And
you also have this thing going in reverse. You have some people who come into prison who have resources and have some means, and when they sit in prison for a long time, they lose their resources, they lose contact with their loved ones, they lose their means, of course, and then they go outside into a halfway house, and then next thing you know, they're living in a room, and they lose their job, or they become alcoholics, or they start drinking wine, or become drug addicts, and they find themselves on the street because the support mechanisms are insufficient to deal with a destroyed past, basically, because their credibility has been eliminated, and they've been out of the job market, and they may have contracted diseases or become ill or just aged. So it seems to be a never-ending problem coming from both directions, and it has to be stopped at the source. And I think that's the responsibility of our local governments to become more and more aware, and the public who are footing the bill for this should get actively involved in changing the situation. It's only for the best interest of everyone.
So the only thing they seem to do, though, with all those policies is to want to flood prisons with homeless.
I'm sorry, but you're fading out.
Oh, sorry. can you hear me?
Very little, yes.
Okay, hold on. Yeah, so as I was saying, the only thing that they're trying to do with all those policies is to flood prisons with homeless people.
Well, right now the Canadian penitentiary system is in a crisis. They're trying to keep the prisons as full as possible because the crime rate is going down, the prisons are emptying out, and people are going to be losing their jobs. So they're keeping people in longer and bringing them back faster in order to keep the population stable. And if they can throw a few homeless people in there to pump up the population, the quota, they'll do that on the New York Minute, because it's all about big business and money, and we know where that comes from. Globalization, industrialization, the whole nine yards, because everybody's thinking of the buck. We don't care about people anymore. That's the problem.
Mm-hmm. Another element of this is that if you look at prison populations, one of the fastest growing prison population the world over is the population of women that are being incarcerated.
Mm-hmm.
And this coincides with globalized increased stratification and increased inequalities and cuts in the advanced, so-called advanced Western countries all over the world in social spending, spending on education, spending on healthcare. And so at the same time as we see that, we see an increase in the numbers of women that are being put into jail. And I think that that correlation is really important and speaks a lot to why people do what they do, you know, and people who are being picked up and called criminals and being punished for it, what they're doing is eking out a survival when the state isn't giving them any support whatsoever. And sometimes it seems that that means they're engaging in actions that, for you know, the state has decided aren't allowable or don't meet their standards of what proper behavior is.
Well, when I take a look at the world forum or the world platform, because we have that, we're in that position sometimes to look at these things, because we don't have to worry about our next meal or roof over our head, even though my cell is actually leaking water on my bed at this moment, and our, you know, one of our wonderful Canadian prisons here looks great on the outside, but it's full of holes on the inside because they're putting money elsewhere. But when one takes a look at that overall picture, you find out that children, women, minority groups, the marginal people around the world are being victimized by those haves and the have-nots. Are just the distance between the two is just stretching exponentially in two different directions. And it's a wonder they're not trying to call the herd by killing off hundreds of people. Maybe they are, I don't know. That's a whole other ballgame. But you don't have to go that far to see the indicators of how women are treated specifically, because I was looking at the Montreal Gazette, I think it was, the other day, and there was a special section on communications, or maybe it was the National Post, and it was about there was a communications conference in Montreal, and they had pictures of all these different people from all walks of life and who are in the telecommunications industry, and they were giving speeches at a large hotel, and out of about 40 or 50 speakers, there was only one female, and she was an Asian. I mean, this is at the executive level. So that gives you an idea where women stand in terms of business. So, I mean, that's an indicator. Women still have a long way to go.
We have Tulin Odegger joining us on the line right now.
Pardon?
Can you hear me?
Yes, hi.
Hi, can you hear Roy also?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah. Yes, I can.
Excellent.
Okay.
Welcome to the marathon.
Thank
okay.
you.
So as I introduced in the beginning, but probably the mics weren't working at the time, Tulin is from the National Law Center on Homelessness and Poverty in Washington, D.C.
Yes.
And so would you like to talk about some of the ways in which, and some of the social policies which contribute to the criminalization of homelessness?
Up here in Canada, I mean, it seems that they give a home. If you have someone walking across the street who's wearing a three-piece suit, he's not getting a ticket, but the homeless person is. And that seems to be something that's prevalent throughout the police services in most major cities. You know, they're looking for the marginal people who are easy to ticket and who can't fight back, who obviously don't have a lawyer, they don't have good clothes on their back, or sometimes not even shoes on their feet. So those are the people they go after because it's relatively safe. And they can just hand out tickets left and right, and then when the person, of course, can't pay it, then they have more fodder for the prison machinery.
Mm-hmm. And
who do not employ homeless people.
Right. Yeah. And how about in the United States?
Well, the United States, from my view, we're looking at a population of a couple of million people in prison, with a multi-trillion-dollar budget for all the essential services and everything else that's. That shares in that industry, you might say. In Canada, we have a multi-billion-dollar industry, not a trillion-dollar industry, but we only have 12,000 inmates, and we have more guards than inmates in the prisons employed by the government.
Maybe Tulin, you would like to comment on that as well.
Yes, could you?
Sorry to catch you. Yeah, I think we're having technical difficulties. Yeah, but Tulin. Tulin, are you still there? Hello? Yeah, so I guess we'll be trying to join her later.
Just to bring everyone who's been speaking so far into the discussion, maybe we can talk a little bit about, I'm sorry I don't speak French, but maybe Tamara can translate. Can we talk a little bit about public space? Because it seems like we're in a time when everything is being privatized. And so when we talk about homes, we're talking about private spaces that some people don't have. So if you don't have a private space, all you've got is a public space. But it seems like increasingly public spaces aren't actually all that public. They're only public if you obey this rule and that law and behave in the way that mainstream society tells you you should behave. And sometimes that means, even if your behavior is deemed offensive, like sleeping on a bench is deemed offensive, then that public space isn't actually so public for you anymore. So maybe you can talk a little bit about what public space really should mean or should be.
Well, public space is one of the main battlefields where the war against the poor and the homeless is being waged. We have many examples of that. Last summer, for years, each summer, the Montreal cops have been harassing street youths who were hanging out in a particular park of Montreal. And about each summer, the main point of gathering for street youths changed from one summer to another because, each summer people would be so much harassed by police that they would, get tired of going there and getting tickets and stuff like that. So in the summer of 2002, lots of street youth were converging and living and sleeping and everything at Vigée Square until the cops decided to implement a zero tolerance policy following certain incidents, but particularly following press coverage totally disgusting from the Journal de Montréal was saying that people living in the street were having a higher standard of living than anyone else and some bullshit like that, amazing stuff, but and that was in 2002. And this summer, large portions of street youth were hanging at the Parc Godefroy-Langlois, which is at the corner of Saint-Guinée and Saint-Catherine. And really, I guess it's probably one of the most ugly and miserable park in Montreal downtown. Like, it's full of concrete and everything, and and they were not, nobody could claim that they were bothering anybody. I mean, there is this this club, stripping club, the Danseuse Nue, là, anyway. So, they were not bothering anybody. But at some point, at the beginning of August, the cops arrive and they pick up all the, comment qu'on appelle ça, des bancs?
Benches?
Yeah, they pick up all the benches that were in the park. And they were telling street kids, to behave, and they were showing, example to them by emptying their beer bottles in where they have the flowers and everything dans les bacs à fleurs. Ils vidaient les bières dans les bacs à fleurs pour montrer aux jeunes de la rue comment se comporter en société. Ça, c'est ça que les polices. That's what the cops were doing. Kicking everybody out for no particular reason other than saying that, you're going to break the law anyway, so we might as well, kick you out right now, So and stuff like that. So that's what's happening.
We have Tulina Dagger back online with us. Yeah. Hello, can you hear me? So would you talk about some of the ways that homelessness is criminalized in the United States?
There are a variety of ways that homelessness is criminalized in the United States. A lot of cities have passed laws that target homeless people, either by making it illegal to panhandle or to sleep outside or to sit on sidewalks. Also, sometimes police will selectively enforce more general laws against homeless people, like blocking a sidewalk or having an open container. And they also will frequently go through areas where homeless people are living in public spaces and just either move people along or clear out their belongings and destroy their belongings. And so they're just kind of a variety of tools that they're using right now to do these types of things.
And has there been any recourse for the homeless population against that?
Yeah, there have been a number of lawsuits that homeless people have filed against cities or police departments in those cities to challenge these practices, and some of these lawsuits have been quite successful. For example, in Miami in the 80s, there was a campaign of harassment of homeless people by the police, and there were a class of homeless plaintiffs that filed a lawsuit against the city, and it effectively put a stop to the harassment and actually made it so that police could not arrest people for sleeping in public if there was no shelter space available. Mm-hmm. And there have been a couple of other lawsuits, I mean, many other lawsuits are on similar issues, and frequently cities will settle even before it goes to trial because, you know, they're concerned about going through the costs of a long lawsuit, and frequently it will lead to much more positive practices with respect to homeless people. But it's still an uphill battle, and it's still something that we're really struggling with here in the United States.
And in terms of going to trial, so how does it happen for the homeless people? Is it more difficult for them in any way than other people?
It is. It is more difficult. But there are certainly a lot of legal services people who work on these lawsuits. The American Civil Liberties Union has also filed many lawsuits as well. The National Law Center, the organization I work with, we've been involved with some lawsuits. And they're, you know, once attention is brought to these legal resources, sometimes law firms will donate their time free of charge to these lawsuits. But it's definitely a problem. And when homeless people get convicted of committing these so-called crimes, they have difficulty getting good representation in court. So that's also part of the problem, too.
Tulin, I just wanted to ask you, too, what kind of reasoning is behind a lot of these local bylaws and ordinances? Who is putting their support behind them, and what's the motivation? Is it economic? Is it moralistic?
Well, I think they see it as having an economic impact. A lot of times there will be either complaints.
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, I think we've lost her. All right. Go ahead.
Well, maybe we can ask the people that are here then what, in their experience, have been the groups that have lended their support to these criminalization bylaws and regulations, and what is the argument that the governments are using to justify such practices?
Ben, il y a plusieurs types de motivations qui sont présentées. On peut reprendre celle de l'été dernier particulièrement, qui était assez intéressante. Il y a eu un développement, comme disait Alex tout à l'heure, il y a eu un développement qui s'est fait au niveau bon, de la fermeture de l'espace public et toute cette question-là. Alors, ils ont fait un plan d'action destiné aux jeunes de la rue qui disait « on va agir en bon père de famille », c'est-à-dire que tous ces jeunes-là qu'on retrouve dans la rue ont des enfants, ont des parents, donc il faut en tenir compte. Ça. Donc, on va les traiter avec respect, on va leur parler, on va leur dire de circuler, on va leur montrer la loi, on va leur donner des informations sur les ressources qu'ils peuvent fréquenter, des choses comme ça. Finalement, tout ce que ces jeunes-là n'ont pas besoin d'entendre ou de voir, parce qu'ils le savent soit déjà ou soit parce que ça ne les intéresse pas de toute façon. Et là, à partir de là, si on a à réintervenir, ben parfait. Là, on donnera un premier ticket. Dans le cas du Squeegee, c'était lors de cette deuxième offense-là, c'est qu'on fait donner la petite punition, c'est-à-dire on donnait un constat d'infraction, puis en même temps, on retire le matériel de Squeegee, on retire le Squeegee et tout ça. Donc, c'était un petit peu la méthode. Et là, on arrivait, bon, à un moment donné, après 3 ou 4 interpellations, ben là, c'était la prison. Donc, c'était la justification, grosso modo, de la police. On peut attester qu'elle n'a pas été du tout suivie. C'est-à-dire que des cas de premier avertissement, d'affaires comme ça, de donner des informations sur la loi ou sur les ressources, il n'y en a pas eu, déjà d'entrée de jeu. Mais on voit que c'était cette approche-là de père de famille. C'est une belle approche de relations publiques qui peut avoir ses effets sur le dessus. Et comme c'est pas un sujet qui est abordé bien souvent, ben automatiquement... Ça reste qu'on n'entend pas parler, puis pendant ce temps-là, ben, on peut judiciariser ces jeunes-là comme on le veut, à qui mieux.
I think we have Rod Graham on the line. Rod, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hi, Rod. Thanks for waiting. Thank you very much. Welcome to the Homelessness Marathon. So you're a writer with Street Sheet in Winnipeg, and I understand that you have done a lot of work on panhandling legislation in Winnipeg and in around the country, and also work with on regulations that criminalize squeegee kids. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about what these criminalization regulations and bylaws look like and what their effects have been.
Well, I've been fighting against these laws, not for them. These laws contravene the Charter of Rights and Freedoms in Canada. As a matter of fact, very recently, more than 3 civic bylaws have been completely repealed because National Anti-Poverty Organization hired lawyers or non-profit activist groups, various ones across Canada, appealed to NAPO, which has finances available for these things to fight injustice in Canada. They won. Here in Winnipeg, there was a bylaw. It was probably one of the first anti-panhandling bylaws in Canada. That was implemented in 1995, and it stipulated that anyone that's panhandling is under the law to avoid bus stops, the entrance to a bank. They can't panhandle before sunup or after sundown, in an elevator, to a moving vehicle, all kinds of things that infringe the rights, the freedom of Canada citizens, and it was purely unethical. Now, you'll be talking to a guy who knows a lot about ethics, Arthur Schaefer. He's also here at the University of Manitoba in Winnipeg. He's on next hour. But there have been, I can tell you the bylaws, the unjust bylaws that there are. Most of them are dealing with panhandlers. Now, the one here in Winnipeg, it was only repealed recently, unfortunately, because this is the way the justice system works. And the fellow that was talking before him, he was saying that there's a law for the rich and a law for the poor, and the laws that do exist are clearly affected. They're used one way for a poor person and one way for a rich person. I'll give you an example. This is a very good example. Here in Winnipeg, in 1968, we had a vagrancy bylaw. There's very few vagrancy bylaws now in North America because they've been taken to court, and they, it was clear that they were unethical. Now, in 1968, there was Nick Turnette. He's probably one of our more pronounced social activists in Winnipeg. He lobbied hard and long against this vagrancy bylaw, and they won, and they overturned it. They repealed it in 1968. And in 1997, I think it was, our city, which is supposed to be quite progressive, brought that vagrancy bylaw back, along with an anti-squeegee kid bylaw, and we still had the panhandling bylaw at that time. And they did that for the reason that they implement all bylaws targeting the poor for the sake of having the average everyday citizen who's not poor, so they won't be uncomfortable. Now, one thing that Arnie Peltz said, who is the NAPO lawyer here, said was that these bylaws are implemented because it is partly a comfort issue. And in most cases, these bylaws are spurred on and eventually implemented by the business community.
Rod, we're gonna have to end things there. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you so much for being patient.
But one thing before I want to before I go.
Okay.
There's
quickly.
Several panhandling bylaws across Canada, Vancouver, Winnipeg, have been repealed. They still have bylaws, but they're not unconstitutional. Now, one thing I want to say before I go. Is this Brett?
Yeah, this is me.
Well, it's good to talk to you in person. I sent you a whole bunch of emails, but it's good to talk to you on air. I mean,
we just have to end things here because we're
they should repeal the squeegee kid bylaws across Canada because they're unconstitutional and they're against the Charter of Rights and Freedoms.
Well, that's a great way. That's a great note to leave things on.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Rod.
I love the squeegee kids. I hope they keep working.
Great.
Bye bye.
Oui, maintenant je vais vous parler, je vais rappeler l'affaire Jean-Pierre Lizotte qui était un itinérant.
You're listening to the Homelessness Marathon live from the streets of Montreal, 14 hours live from the icy streets of Montreal. We've just been listening to an hour on criminalization and social policies. Coming up in the next hour, is housing a human right? The United Nations thinks it is, but is our government doing its part to ensure that we all have access to safe, affordable housing? Find out in hour 6 of the Homelessness Marathon. Social Rights and Myths, broadcasting from the frozen streets of Montreal. You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM, also throughout Canada on campus community stations from coast to coast.
From coast to coast in Saskatchewan, we have Community Radio Society Saskatoon, CFCR 90.5. In BC, we have Kootenai Co-op Radio, CJLY 93.5. University of Northern British Columbia in Prince George, CFUR 88.7 FM. And as well in Manitoba, we have University of Manitoba, CJUM 101.5. You're listening to the Homelessness Marathon in broadcasting from Montreal, 90.3 FM.
1-866-763-4136 is the toll-free number to call anywhere in Canada, 1-866-763-4136. Also, from CKUW Winnipeg, we're going to listen to a piece now just before Social Myths and Rights coming up at 10 o'clock. From CKUW, Change for What? A look at the Change for a Better, a municipal program on panhandling being implemented in Winnipeg.
In Winnipeg, the issue of homelessness is very much a result of our history. Many of our visible homeless are from the First Nations. They're people who have moved to the city to seek opportunities not available in isolated northern communities. A lot of them are the lost children, children who were taken away from their families, adopted out at very young ages, and grew up straddling two cultures. In Winnipeg, one of the people that picks up where government agencies leave off is John Moen, whose own mother was once a resident of the Main Street Strip. His Siloam Mission is about half a block from the old Salvation Army Harbor Light Center. It's surprisingly light and bright inside. It looks more like a restaurant than what you'd think a soup kitchen would look like. And over a bowl of nutritious but somewhat scrappy stew served up with